Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
All righty, busy morning, 9:43, 17 till 10, and we're just getting started with our coverage all day long of the inauguration of the 47th President of the United States, who also happened to be the 45th President of the United States, one Donald J. Trump. Aaron Dusso joins us now, Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
We're freaking out because we're getting 4 to 8 inches of snow here, which I guess there in Indianapolis makes you snicker, huh?
Right, yeah, that's a nice snowfall, but not too bad.
Well, for you, maybe. For us, it's, you know, we don't know how to handle that kind of stuff. Let's talk about, you know, as I sit here thinking about what's and watch what's happening in Washington, and we did talk to a friend of mine, a reporter at the Capitol Arena earlier, and there was some chaos, not anything serious, just a lot of screaming, and I could barely hear her, but we did get an idea of what it's like to be on the ground there. It seems as though when you look at the ceremonial thing that's going on with Presidents Biden and Trump and the tea, I'm hopeful that we're at a stage now where it's kind of like, you know, a couple saying, look, I said some things, you said some things, let's put it all behind us and move forward. Is that terribly Pollyanna-ish of me to think that?
I mean, it would be nice, and certainly Biden and Trump are showing the signs of cordial transition here. So if we can hope that that would continue, but Congress, of course, is a different thing, and so I would guess the acrimony will return really quickly.
Well, that I anticipate, but I guess I'm wondering specifically as it relates to Fauci and Milley and the pardons and whoever Adam Schiff, whoever else was included in there. And the January 6th protesters or rioters, whatever you want to call them, how likely is from the presidential part of it of that to be behind us, if as opposed to just the regular partisanship in Congress?
I would say that the ball is really obviously in Trump's court as the new president. If he if he goes down the path of wanting to pardon the January 6th individuals who are in jail right now or serving some type of sentence, that I think is a further escalation of this process. So we'll see if he decides just to let it go and move on, or if he wants to, even starting today, potentially, he'll pardon those individuals.
So if he does pardon them, the Republicans have the House and the Senate. At that point, could that be the final part of it, or what really could the Republicans or what could the Democrats do to further the acrimony? Because I guess maybe in my own naive way, I'm thinking, okay, so he pardons the January 6th people. That's it. It's over. It's behind us. Ashley Babbitt's dead. A couple of Capitol Police officers have died. I'm not trying to minimize any of this at all. I'm just trying to move the country forward. How much of a bump in the road would the pardoning of the January 6th people be?
I think what it does is it actually sends a signal to Republicans that it's business as usual, that the things that we were saying before, we're going to continue down that path. And so because Republicans have all the power, everything is up to them. And so seeing, you know, President, you know, Trump decide to continue is a clear signal that, yes, we should continue down the same path we've been going for a long time. Now, if he changes course, that's a new signal, and the most important thing is a signal to his followers in the Republican Party, because they have the power, and they're the ones that ultimately have to make the change.
What can we infer from what we've seen since the election about what a second Trump presidency is likely to look like?
I mean, I think he's going to follow through with, you know, vast majority of the promises that he said. I mean, we've heard reports about the things he plans to sign even today, the executive actions. I'm paying attention to, I want to see if, you know, this national emergency at the border is declared. I want to see if there's a national emergency related to energy. I mean, those are big declarations because they have real effects. declaration of emergency at the border that frees up a ton of money for these law enforcement agencies to continue and ramp up their efforts there. Declaration of emergency on energy, it frees up the ability to fast track permits for increased production of energy such as oil, natural gas. So those have real impacts, you know, these emergency declarations right away. And so that's something I feel I'm really looking towards to see if that happens or not.
When it comes to President Trump and the big stick and people being so terrified of him, as they are, and rightfully so, does that change after the midterms? Does he have 2 years to really get his agenda through? And at what point does the Republican Party shift, or does it shift beyond that? I guess what I'm saying is, after the midterm elections, compare and contrast the first 2 years of the Trump presidency with the second 2 years. Obviously, he would be a lame duck with the second 2 years. But at what point is he at his maximum power to want of a better phrase, bully people into what he wants them to do?
I'd say right now. Right now is when he's at his maximum power. So we've seen this with presidencies from Biden, the first Trump, to back when Obama took office. So that first 2 years is the key, because it's very likely a good bet that you're going to lose control of one, if not both, houses in Congress. Certainly the House, the Senate sets up, the map looks still favorable to Republicans, but the House seems very likely they're going to lose that. And so once you lose that, you lose a lot of power. So this is it. And I think Republicans are well aware of this, because all parties are. You're in control of all three of these big branches. This is the time to act. So I would expect these 2 years to be a blizzard of activity, both in Congress and in the White House.
What do you think his primary goals are? I know immigration is certainly up there. Tariffs, anything else? Is he ideologically bound to anything else, I guess I'm asking?
I mean, the things I expect to see right away are, you know, some of the red meat that the Republican Party has put out there. So banning the DEI programs at the federal level, that'll happen probably today. I would say banning trans women from participating in women's sports, that kind of thing to happen. And those are relatively easier, declarations to make, for the president, because they're not likely, they don't require necessarily Congress to do anything. And anytime you require Congress to do something, it's a more difficult process.
When it comes to the future of the Republican Party with the Marjorie Taylor Greens and that segment, as opposed to the more moderate members of the party, what do you think it looks like 4 years from now?
I think that they're, you know, in a strong position as they've been, certainly maybe in my lifetime. And I think that they have moved more to the Trump party every single year. Trump's been around now for, this is 9 years. And by the time he's done, we're going to be over a decade of essentially the Trump Republican Party. And by the end of that, it is the Trump Republican Party, no question. And so what we would call the more moderate Republicans, they've been largely drummed out of the party, you know, over the last number of years anyway. And so I doubt there's anything left, you know, by the time of his administration.
So this is the Republican Party going forward?
Right. Yeah, there's no question. Now, because Trump has, you know, led by, you know, personality in a lot of ways and drawing people to him personally, once you lose that, and of course, the history of the world suggests that once you lose that kind of charismatic leader, it's tough for anyone to fill in. So what happens to the Republican Party when they're looking for the new person to take that mantle? It could divide. It could break up into multiple parts, but I wouldn't say it's going to break up moderates versus the Trump wing. It's going to break up into various factions of a more conservative, strongly right-wing party.
That's what I was trying to ask, I guess. Who's the next Trump, or does anybody – because that's going to be a big old giant vacuum, right? So is there anybody that can fill that, or what is it likely to look like?
At this point, I don't see anyone, and certainly not any of his own family. It doesn't seem to, you know, have that kind of ability to draw people to them. That's tough. And what we see when charismatic leaders, you know, from countries around the world is when that individual dies, the countries break apart. I mean, a classic example is in Yugoslavia. When Tito dies in the early 80s, Yugoslavia over the next decade breaks apart, and heck, they go to war and commit atrocities in those wars because they lost that the point of light, essentially, that people see in these charismatic leaders.
Tell me about J.D. Vance. What do you see for him in the next couple of years, 4 years?
I mean, the vice president plays little role ever in any of these administrations. At best, they might be given some token, areas for them to focus on. And those are largely just gifts from the presidential, from the president to the vice president. So I don't want to say this is anything about J.D. Vance, but I don't expect much from J.D. Vance over the next number of years, because he is, you know, vice president. And as you know, John Adams said, the very first vice president of the United States, that the country has come up with this job for me to do that's totally meaningless. And it's still totally meaningless to a large part right now.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time. Professor Aaron Dusso, Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis. That's the pregame show to our election coverage, which really gets going at 10 o'clock. We'll talk to Newell Norman when we come back on WWL.